welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this special podcast, Your Mom. You know what? Your Mom. Your Mom's a Podcast.
Yeah, Your Mom's a Podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
Yeah.
How did
we
you
want to know? We need the help because Milana and I are both, I'm Sundeep Parikh, you're
Milana Weintraub.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
We're fools, and we honestly just don't want to mess up our kids. And we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
Right. To learn to be better parents, maybe, and also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast.
Hi, Sundeep.
Hi, Milana.
Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast.
Yeah, welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast.
How long do you think we could do that joke for before we hate it and everyone listening hates it?
300 episodes.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
this is okay. A long road. Sundeep.
Hi, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited about today's guest because she's actually quite an inspiring person in every freaking way, and I want to know how she got that way so that my kid can be a percentage as inspiring as she is.
She and her mom, also super inspiring.
I know, you cried just at the mom interview.
I did. Well, listen, we're going to get into all that. We're going to get to our guest soon. Thank you guys for listening to Your Mom is a Podcast. Be sure to follow us.
Yeah, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Thread, on all the threads, plural, on all the threads.
Please, Apple, Spotify.
Just give us a subscribe. I know that you know this, but it helps us out so that we can keep doing this and paying the people that are helping us do this.
I wanted to check in. I got a thing I want to check in with you about.
Okay.
Or at least something I'm going through. I'm wondering if you have feedback on, which is...
Oh, good, because I was worried you were mad at me, but keep going.
No. Not yet. So had a big conversation with the little guy yesterday about death.
Oh.
He was very interested in talking about it. And I, because we've had a few folks in our lives that have passed. And here's this four-year-old going, Daddy, am I going to die?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, intense thing to hear your son say out loud. Yeah. It's not the first time, by the way, but like there was a little bit more like, hey, I really want to talk about this and understand this better. Mm. And it was challenging. I didn't want to ascribe, like, I just feel like the quote unquote maybe easy answers are like to the stuff that I heard as a kid growing up, like, which was like, for us, it was reincarnation. It was just like, no, well, someday you'll be reborn and da da da. And it'll just be, and it's all the theories behind afterlife or like from my wife's, you know, Christian tradition, it's, you know, heaven, right? And it becomes like a very easy, oh, well, I'll see each other in heaven and everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to just go there with it because I feel like it's for me at least, a little bit of a cop-out. So what I ended up doing was like talking about like, hey, how what happens, like the cycle of life and that we become the earth, we become part of the earth and the earth grows new life. Mm. And that's just, we're just like a part of that cycle. So yes, we all die, but... you know, sort of what is dead will never die kind of a vibe. Because he had also read that like in books, like, hey, I heard that stars die. Like, what does that mean that a star dies? And I was like, oh yeah, well, this is actually a great example because like star doesn't really die. That's just like from our perspective, we're like, oh, that star is no longer doing the star thing it was doing. So now it's dead. But actually all the things that made up the star go off and become something else, become part of other things or create their own thing. And so I tried that, but then I was also like, I'm talking to a four-year-old.
It sounds like you're also you didn't lie and you're offering valuable feedback. I mean, I think we're all thinking about death at various points in the day.
Yeah,
every time somebody coughs, I am you know, checking in with my own health and the health of the people around me. And so I think what you're offering, honestly, is quite soothing to me, even.
I felt good about it. And then he also was like, Daddy, I'm scared to die. I'm scared to die. He did say that. And he started to cry. And he was in his, he was in the bath, and so I'm like hugging this wet child as he's crying. And I'm just like, so the only place that I could think to go to was like, we're alive, we're here, I love you, you know, and thank you. Thank you for telling me that you're scared and that you can always talk to me about how you're feeling about anything. Was kind of where I landed, because I didn't know what else to do. Like, I didn't want to, like, you know, the immediate thing was like, well, no, everything's gonna be fine. We're all gonna be fine. And I think that's what he's looking for, is like, are we gonna be, am I gonna be okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I tried to just comfort him with that, but without just being like, oh yeah, but you'll not never die. You know, like, I'm not gonna be like, you're gonna be immortal or something. You know, like,
there's a part of what you said that sounds like, even when we die, we're okay.
That's what I was trying to find.
Yeah. That's complicated. And honestly, quite soothing to me.
As you described Bria to us, she is someone who answers hard questions well. Now, I'm not saying that she's going to answer this question for us, but this is my segue, which is...
Yeah, she's really good at having difficult conversations. Yeah. She's an activist, an organizer, a writer, a new mom. She's contributed to dozens of electoral and advocacy campaigns. She's worked with the U.S. Department of State and Public Defender Service in D.C., as well as having served as president of Yale's NAACP chapter and co-director of AIDS Walk New Haven. I met her because she was actually an advisor, a teacher, a mentor of mine. She's an incredibly inspiring person, a great person, as Sandeep said, at having difficult conversations in beautiful ways, and never made me feel stupid, even though sometimes I was. Her thoughts on race, gender, sexuality have all been featured in publications like Elle, Harper's Bazaar, Refinery 29, and Parade. She's recognized as a 2023 Creative Capital awardee and a 2017 Glamour Woman of the Year awardee.
Nice.
Her book, Rooted, The American Legacy of Land Theft and Modern Movement for Black Land Ownership, will be coming out in June of 2024, year.
That's exciting.
I am so grateful and excited to introduce you to Bria Baker. First of all, I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm very inspired by you, obviously.
Oh my gosh, me more.
No, me more. So we are talking to your mom. She was so funny, so sharp, so spiritually inspiring. She is a reverend herself, or a pastor?
Mm-hmm. Pastor, yeah.
A pastor herself.
Both, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your mom?
Yeah, my mom, Tina, is my world. She's everything. She is a pastor, a reverend, a mom of four, a life coach. She recently went back to school, and that's been a super inspiring journey. And just in general, you know, I've learned so much from my mother because she had a very different upbringing than she brought us into. She was raised in a very conservative Black church environment, which I don't think people think of Black people as growing up in conservative spaces, but it was the case. I remember when my mom wore pants for the first time, and she was in her 30s and already had three kids. And the church that she grew up in said that women can't wear pants. And so the first time she wore pants was after decades where the church decided to change that rule. And it was a big unlearning and relearning process. And what I just have always respected about my mother is she doesn't fear that sort of thing. She welcomes difficult conversations, is open to learning, is open to growing, and just she's made me who I am as a result.
Yeah, that seems like you are such a good activist in that way. It seems like she modeled it for you very clearly.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I love that anecdote about wearing the pants. I just really identify that with that as a Indian dude too. My you know, there's all these like rules around what's right and wrong, and I think a lot of folks don't necessarily think of Black and brown folks as conservative in that way. Mm-hmm. But for my mom, I just remember like bathing suits being a real big deal, and like how much you show of anything at all, like your arms at all, you know, like that was like, these were huge sort of for lack of a better word, like milestones for her to be able to showcase herself.
I think that's the perfect word too. Milestones really is the word, because I do think it marked embracing those periods and embracing new versions of yourself, especially as a woman who has been told to be pure and to whatever the things that come with mm-hmm. certain religious expectations. I think the moment that you start to shed that and say, it's okay to show a little arm, to be in a bathing suit on the beach, to wear a skirt, I mean, but also to wear pants and to make those choices and have them be choices is a milestone when otherwise the choice was made for you. So I love that you framed it as that.
First of all, feeling really validated that you liked Milestone. So thank you. I feel validated. and that leads me to this part of our show, which is the sort of game show aspect of the show, where we had asked your mom a bunch of questions beforehand. We have a pre-interview with your mother, as you know. Mm-hmm. And you don't know any of the answers, right? Like I
don't even know any of the questions. She's tight. Right. Like,
even better.
Good job, Tina.
Yeah, way to go, Tina. We appreciate that. And then we're going to ask you, what do you think she said? Mm. Now you can answer. You know, we'd like you to answer from your place of truth, rather than trying to gamify the thing. That said, I'm still going to judge you. We are going to judge. We're going to give you a gold star if you happen to match. And if you don't match, you get no gold star. And just remember, this is important now, the points mean absolutely nothing.
The consequences are zero. This will affect your life in no way. Okay. Except for you might learn a thing or two about your mom and we might learn a thing about how to raise a good kid. Okay, so in terms of your activist spirit, would you say that's more nature or nurture?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think my family would think of themselves as activists prior to me. And they definitely see me as a catalyst for like bringing in more formal political issue areas. But the church that we grew up in definitely did community organizing for sure. And before my mother was a pastor, my grandparents were pastors. And so that was the church that she grew up in, was following her parents' lead as community organizers. Every election year, you know, people running for office would come and be like, can I stump from your pulpit? And so my grandfather's kind of this like, you know, gatekeeper almost of like, well, who's worthy of sitting in my pulpit and talking to my congregation about politics? But I do think that it was a bit more like general. And then the part that was nurture was that I like really dug into very specific issue areas that I cared about, like policing in America, land justice and things like that. And those were things that my mom always says, like, I sent my kid to Yale to be a doctor and she came back a Black Panther. She always says that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, at least you didn't have to pay the tuition. It was a scholarship. So I would say it's a little bit of both for sure. And then the part that makes me really feel like there was some nurture to it, that like my mom was really instrumental, was when we were little for Christmas, my mom started a tradition with my dad where every Christmas we'd open all of our gifts and we had to choose our favorite gift. And then they'd take us to a children's hospital and make us give it away to a child who was in the hospital. And they intentionally made us give away a toy we had chosen as our favorite, as opposed to buying a new toy for us to give away, because they wanted us to understand the value of sacrifice. And that you don't just like give people like what's convenient for you. You give people what is your best. And sometimes your best is something that will cause you to sacrifice. And so that is something that we did from a very young age. And I just remember like the first few years, she always says, oh, you used to cry so much. But you learned over time that like it's a beautiful thing to be a blessing to someone else, especially in a season where otherwise it can be very commercialized. She always wanted us to remember, like, this is not about receiving, receiving, receiving. You've got to be a giver. So I do think those parts are really informative to my activism.
Oh, man, I really love that. I'm very curious about how she managed through those years where you were clearly not on board as probably like a 4 or 5 year old. I'm just thinking about it from my perspective, because I think of the same thing. I'm like, man, we can't just like get him a mountain of gifts for Christmas and not, you know, not practice some form of giving back. That's amazing. Okay. I want to check in with you in 4 years.
Yes. How it's going. Yeah.
How you navigate that. Yeah. That's amazing.
Okay. Let's hear what Tina said.
She would always mediate her siblings' arguments. She would always say, no, that person didn't do the right thing. And we're not going to talk to them until they do the right thing. Yes. There's household messages. Like, if you want to be treated a certain way, you should be treating others that way. There's some things that I nurtured her in, and then there's things that just, it was innate in her. It was just, it was there, whether we recognized it or not. It was always there. I went to school to visit her because I told all of my kids, you're not in college alone. I went there and she was sharing that she met some of the original members from the Black Panther. So I began to say, something's in there and I want to be a part of nurturing that.
Love it. She even mentioned the Black Panther thing. I mean,
she did. Honestly, all the points for that one.
We'll give you the gold star. For sure. Yeah. I'm so curious about that Black Panther experience. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. So there was a professor at Yale when I was there. Her name is Kathleen Cleaver. She was one of the few women who had like high ranking positions within the Black Panther Party. Everyone wanted her class. I actually wasn't able to get a spot in her class, but I think, I don't know.
So she was one of those rock star professors.
Oh yeah. And it was just, it was so cool because I got to learn about the things that I had loved about the Black Panther Party. And I also got to hear about the things that she wished were different and the experiences that she had as a woman in a very like, you know, patriarchal, masculine space. And so it was just really beautiful for me to learn like what it looks like to be an activist, but that doesn't have to mean that I replicate things that I'm seeing men around me do, that I can still be soft and I can still be me. And still be in this activist space. So it was really, really transformative. And then all of this is happening. I entered college. I entered Yale in 2012. And I graduated in 2016. So I'm a college student during the beginnings of the Black Lives Matter movement. And so it's, I'm watching Trayvon Martin. I'm watching Eric Garner. I'm watching Michael Brown. I'm watching Sandra Bland. And that is coloring the way that I'm seeing the world. So I entered Yale a physics major. And by sophomore year, I'd switched to political science and was like, I can't imagine being in a lab. And this is happening around me, that people who look like me, people who look like my brother, are not able to access things because of the way that they look, because of the assumptions that people make about them. And I just want to be really like in the center of changing that. And so I think that's where my mom was very much like, oh, you came back so militant. But I was like, no, I'm just angry and I want things to look better than what they are now.
On that, you asked your mom, do you remember a time that she, your mom, encouraged you to dream? She did have a specific. I'm curious if you if there's anything that specific comes up for you.
She's like the wing beneath any dreamer's, like, she's like the wind beneath any dreamer's wings. Like, I remember being either in middle school or very young in high school and being like, I want to write a book. And at the time, I wanted to write like a fiction, like young adult book sort of thing, like a teen fiction book. And I was just like, oh yeah, mom, I'm going to write this book. And I'm just playing around. I'm sitting on our communal computer because that's how we did it back in the day. Gen Z, you don't even know. But I'm sitting on the communal computer in the basement, like typing away chapters of this fiction book that I'm creating in my head. And my mom got a graphic designer to come up with a mock book cover for me so that I could visualize what I was creating. And Dad, if you're listening, sorry, but she was like, don't tell your dad because I spent a lot of money on it. She spent a lot of money on this like rendering of a book cover that like never came to be. And I felt so bad after. Like, there were the book is, I don't even know what it was called or what it was about anymore.
What do you mean? What do you mean the book never came to be? You're coming out with a book this year.
True. Yeah. And that's why I'm
and
like,
you already have a cover for it. Now you got to use that cover. Imagine.
But she definitely planted the seed and made me believe that I could do something like that. And she just, she never made me believe that I was being delusional or I was dreaming outside of my tax bracket, so to speak. Even when I was saying that I wanted to go to Yale, again, you know, no shade, Dad, but my dad was like, Yale is very expensive. You know, there's amazing schools in New York. You can get in-state tuition. What about Rutgers? It's really close. And I was like,
but
I wanted...
More the realist perspective.
Yeah, he was very realist. And I get that. You know, he's got to think of the finances. How are we going to pay for that? And my mom was like, she said she wants to go to Yale. She's going to Yale. And that's it. That's the girl is going to Yale. And she believed that with me so fully. And I did. And then I got the full scholarship, and which was need-based. So in hindsight, like, I would have gotten that anyway. But it was just her being like, see, you knew it. I knew it. Like, all we've got to do is just, like, believe that. And she's always been a big, like, if you have the faith in it, it can happen. You got to work hard, of course. But nothing is beyond your capacity. Like, you can push yourself to do anything. And she would always plant those seeds for us. My mom is just that person for sure.
Let's hear what she has to say.
I decided to take all of my kids and give them the ability to dream. People can come to the left and to the right and tell you, you can't do that. They're not the author of your dream. Okay. So you can't let a ghostwriter come in and start writing on your dream. I remember she said, Gail was having something and that was her school choice. And she really wanted to be there. And she was maybe in eighth grade. And I said, well, we're going to go. We're going to go. We're going to figure out how to get there. And whatever we have to do, we're going to go. And I remember, because I was very heavy set at the time, I couldn't do the walk with her, with the tour guide. So I said, mommy can't go because my legs is going to start hurting. But every time you walk down a corridor, I want you to say in your inside voice, I'll be back.
Oh, I can't wait to call her after this. She's so good. Oh, she did do that. That's so real. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I love saying I'll be back.
Yeah, that's so great.
I love teaching a kid the power of thought, the power of prayer, the power of manifestation and visualization. That's so, so powerful. What a cool...
Even with the book cover, right? Like, that's what she's sort of helping you do.
Yeah, similar
thing. Visualize
thing.
The reality of this. Like, this is real. It's not just in, you know, it doesn't have to just live in your imagination.
Yeah. And I feel like the best example she gave, though, like, I don't know if this will come up in future things, but it feels relevant to this question, is like, what made me chase my dreams was seeing her do that with hers. And I won't get like too ahead of myself, but I just always saw her doing things. And if she had an idea, she was like, I want to do that. Like, she would self-publish books. And there was one point where she was like, I want to be a gospel singer. Like, she sung in our church choir, was amazing singer, always the soloist. But she was like, I want to record a gospel album. She's like, how do you even begin with that? You're like a working class, like, you know, black reverend in New York. And what does that even look like? And she like gets all this equipment and brings it into the church. She starts teaching the choir original songs that she made. And she has a live recording at the church of this gospel album. I still have that CD now.
Was she always this way? Or was it like, did you see? I mean,
she was not always this way. But in my lifetime, I always remember her this way, but she was not. And I think this is an interesting one. I kind of like, if this were a question, I know I'd be answering this the way that she would answer it. But when she was younger, my mom did not believe in herself at all. She struggled in school. She like always talks about like barely graduating, basically like being pushed through the school system and not really feeling like people believed in her. And she had a few formative experiences that changed that for her. One was that she was a typist and a secretary at a company that now doesn't exist, but it was called Computer Associates back in the day. And her boss at the time asked her, I guess she was up for a promotion or a raise. And they were like, oh, what do you want? And she said a number and he said, you don't value yourself enough. And the moment you start valuing yourself, I won't be able to afford you. And that was when, like, that was something that she always shared and was just like, that's when I realized, like, I got to be bolder with what I say and what I do. I just thought as a college graduate, there was a cap on what I could do. And that was one of those moments where she was like, no, this powerful white guy who's paying my bills told me that I'm not valuing myself enough. And that was a big thing for her. And I also think being a mother was the next motivator, was that, like, I think she didn't have a lot of faith in herself, but then having us made her be like, well, if I'm telling you you're amazing and you're part of me, then how can I not try to see what I instilled in you, which parts of you are from me? And so again, like, that's when she started like really pushing back on like, what part of my theology makes sense to me versus what part feels restrictive, like wearing skirts. Like, at the time, women couldn't preach. Now my mother's a pastor and preaches all the time. Like, a lot of these things she could not do as a child.
Pants.
Yeah, right. In pants. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
we asked Tina, what's something that Priya did when she was a kid that drove her crazy?
I think my mom would say not prioritizing myself. I was kind of a pushover as a kid, especially in like my friendships. I think she always felt like you give so much to your friends and I want you to like prioritize you and stop like letting people like, and it's weird. It's like on the one hand, I was definitely the person who was like, if that's wrong, I'm going to call it out. But otherwise I was like, I'm going with the flow, whatever y'all want, I'll do and whatever makes y'all happy. And mom was like, no, what makes you happy? Say it, like tell them, don't let them tell you. And I think that's what my mom would have said is that I wasn't outspoken enough, which is like, now look at me.
Let's play the tape.
Yeah, I think the thing that drove me crazy was that she let people walk over her. Not this version of Bria, but younger Bria, you know, and I would just be like, even when your cousins would kind of take advantage. And one day she just really took the authority and told her cousin, who she was very close with, I'm not talking to you anymore because you're not going to talk to me. Like, and I was sitting there like, yes, yes, yes.
Was that Brittany that you told? Was that
That wasn't Brittany. Oh, okay. That was my sister cousin, Kenya, who is 6 months older than me. We have always grown up like this.
Are you guys talking now?
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, we're bestie cousins always. But yes, she'll remember that moment. We got in a big argument right before a sleepaway camp, too. And I was nervous to put my foot down because I was like, she's getting to camp first. She's going to turn everyone against me.
Oh.
And she, I'm not good friends. We were like 12 or 13. And I was just like, I don't care if no one's my friend. I got to say, I don't like whatever. I don't even remember what happened, but I didn't like it. And so we weren't talking. And then I get to camp a couple days after her. And I was so nervous, like, okay, I'm going to see her. She's going to still have this grudge and she's going to be mad at me and she's going to have her crew. And we get there and she like hugs me. She's like, I'm sorry, please be my friend. And we just get back to it. So it's absolutely water under the bridge. But I totally remember that moment.
Yeah, but you like showed your value, right? I'm worth this respect. And then she came around and showed you the respect. Are you the oldest?
I am. I'm the oldest of my siblings.
Okay.
So with my siblings, I'm such a typical oldest sister. I mean, an older daughter. And my mom, when we were little, like I would play such a, you know, secondary parent role that one day when I was, I don't know, had to be like 7 or 8, my mom was like, Bria, you love your siblings, don't you? Yes. And you love to support them and lead them. Yes. But you are a sister and I want you to be their sister. So I want you to do me a favor and write down mommy on a piece of paper and hand it back to mommy so I can be the mommy and you can be a sibling and you don't have to have that pressure on you. And we went through this, you know, we went through the activity. I still act like that. Like my youngest brother.
That's amazing.
But my little brother still calls me like mama sometimes. And he used to get us Mother's Day gifts. We are 7 years apart, me and my little brother.
Okay.
My sisters were like stepladders, so it's like 2 years apart for each of us. And then me and my brother are 7 years apart. And so, yeah, I'm like, yeah, those are my little heartbeats for sure. And when we were little, like they'd get into arguments and they wouldn't go to mommy, daddy and be like, she said this, she said that. Which one is right? They'd be like, Bria, she took the remote from me. And like, I'm sitting next to my mom and they're asking me to fix whatever is going on with them. So
it's you're like this adjudicator in your house, in your household. And so you still feel that way a little bit. And are you saying that like it's still kind of interesting. It feels like you can have a totally different role in your family life than you do in your public life or your career life, right? So are you like, is that something you've come to peace with? Or are you saying that like, oh, I still feel like it's kind of a pushover in this respect, and that's
or like neglecting your own needs, prioritizing others over your own.
Yeah, I do still think I do that, and I think sometimes it's like it's okay to me because I recognize like in the moment what this moment needs is like someone to be the bigger person. But I think there's also parts of me that reflect, and it's like, but it always is me, and I would like to not have to be that person. And I think my mom encourages me and is like, stop being that person that everyone is mediating, everyone is asking for that advice and support and resources from, and just like, what does Bria want?
It reminds me of the story that Tara Brachos tells on her podcast about, and I'm going to butcher it, but I think you'll like it, is like, there's kids, there's these two kids at a table and they're being served pancakes. And, you know, both of them want the first pancake. And then the mom who's serving the pancakes is like, Well, you know, Jesus, he would give the first pancake. He would give the first pancake rather than take it. So, you know, think about that before you demand the pancake. And then so the oldest brother says, you know, I'm going to give you the opportunity to be Jesus.
I am so generous.
Right.
Yeah.
That I'm going to give you the opportunity to be the bigger person. Yeah. It's good.
I love that.
So I love that story. I also love Tara Brach. God, what a great teacher. Okay. We asked your mom, what's the best present you gave Bria? So this is something that you received as a child that is the best present.
Do you know
what it is?
I know what my answer is. I hope she knew to save this answer. When I was, and this was also at a time when we were really struggling financially. We did not have a lot of money. My mom had been laid off from that computer associate's job post 9/11. And we were now family of six on one income. And so we were struggling. And I think this was a year that my mom says she couldn't actually afford to get me something physical, but it was my best gift. I think this was my 10th birthday. And she woke me up. So I'm a June baby. She woke me up at like 6 a.m. on my birthday and said, Bria, we're going to go swimming. And that just felt like the coolest thing. Like, who goes swimming before school? Like that, like what? Swimming before school? Like, it's one thing to be like, okay, when you get home, we're going to do something fun. But like, we're going to go before. And then I get to go to school smelling like chlorine. Like, I know y'all are not been in the pool today.
Like a queen.
Like, I was just like, I am the coolest kid here. Like, I have been in a pool. So she took me swimming.
Smell
we went
this.
To the rec center. Like, it was like free or very subsidized. We went to the rec center, did some swimming in the lap pool or something. And then I went to school, was so happy, got home. And she said, I'm going to let you cook dinner, which is like hilarious. Like my gift was to cook for the family. But I was so excited because up until that point, I had never been allowed to cook on the stove. That was the rule. And so I got to cook the family. I think it was like chicken Alfredo pasta or something like that. And I was just so excited to like put everything together and like have everyone eat the food and be like, this is so good, Rhea. Wow, you're such a big girl. This is delicious. Double digits. Look at you. And it was just the most memorable gift. I don't think I can remember any other gifts she gave me as a kid, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's the one that like stands out so much, was getting to swim before school and get to make the family dinner after school.
I just love the idea of you walking around school being like, yeah, you smell my arm.
Right.
I went swimming.
What do you smell? You see that?
Yeah, you get
my
that?
My hair's still wet.
Get a whiff of this. All right, let's play Tina's answer.
When she turned 10, I had no money. We had no money. And she was like, Mommy, I'm 10. And all I said was, Bria, when you come home, you have an amazing gift. I had no clue what it was. I had no money. But I just was like, Lord, what can I do for her that'll make her feel special? She came home and I said to her, your gift is that you're going to cook for the family and Mommy's going to show you how to cook. And she was like, oh, really? I was like, yes. And my other kids was like, can I cook when I turn 10? Absolutely. And I got out the ramen noodles and I was like, so we're going to put some water in here. Now take out that and put that in there. Now I tell them now, don't you eat that ramen. It ain't no good, but it was good back then. We ate it. But she got a menu and she typed a menu that said La Bria, and breakfast, lunch, and dinner was noodlette, which was ramen noodles. And they all would get their menu and say, I think I'm going to get the breakfast noodlette. Whatever they ordered, it was the same thing. And she was so happy for that day that I spent nothing on, but I gave her me. And she was so happy because she said, I felt so special that day that I'm touching the stove. I'm cooking for the family. And they loved it, including my husband. He was like, can I get a little more of that noodle?
I knew it was pasta. I thought it was Alfredo. Okay, it was wrong.
I was going to say, I don't know. Should we give her the star? She didn't get pasta. The dish right.
Like, pasta.
I mean, I don't know.
This is a bad time to say that the sponsor for the show is ramen noodles.
Yes, it's ramen.
It's ramen noodles.
I like that name better.
It is ramen.
Bria, I don't think we have a more successful kid mom duo on this show.
I am not sure you didn't cheat. Is where I'm at right now. Because
I was like, oh, so like, how did it go? And she was like, they told me not to tell you anything. I was like, Mom, it's not like the CIA. Like, I don't think they were like that intense. You can tell. She was like, they were great, but I can't tell you anything else.
I love it. Yeah. So far, 5 for 5. So
wow, this is incredible.
You guys clearly you know, talk to each other too much. Just the idea that it's never the thing. It's never the money that you spend on the thing. It's like, it's never, ever that. It's the experience that of feeling empowered, of having the connection with each other, of like this like big service thing that you were responsible for, like giving you this opportunity to do that, like basically giving you the opportunity to be Jesus and serve the pancake face.
Yes.
Like that's so crazy. And like that, and here it is, your takeaway so many years later of like, I can't even remember the other ones.
Literally.
Like,
I can't believe she didn't remember the swimming though. That was a key part. The swimming before school was amazing.
I was like, was the swimming just a way to buy time? Because like she was like, I didn't even know what I was going to do. Like, I wonder if that was her panic time.
She's so good at this like mental priming too. You know, she was like, you'll be back at Yale. We're going to print the book cover. And she kind of did that here too, where she was like, when you come back from school, you're going to have an amazing present. So that whatever she said, you would be like, I am ready for the amazing present. Yeah.
See, my fear would be like you'd build up the expectation and then when it's like not something, like not the Lego castle that you wanted, you know. But that's not your mom. She's like, I'm going to build up the expectation and I'm going to land the plane. Ugh,
but you so know cool. why? Because it's how you raise the kids too. Because I like, right. I don't think she, I mean, even back to the Christmas giving away a toy story, she didn't really raise us to be materialistic. So I don't think I expected like, oh my gosh, there's like a toy car at home, from, you know, something like that flashy. I think I expected it to be some sort of experience or moment like that, because that's how she had like raised us, was to value those things. So I also think it's like, yeah, you can do that when you when you plant those seeds so consistently. And I think that's the part is like, how are you so consistent that like by the time the kid is 10, you're not like, shoot, I missed out on 10 years worth of making sure they value experiences. It's like, how did she know to do this at Christmas and that when I was this age? And so that by the time I was older, that was a norm for me. And that I don't, even now with my son, it's like I'm in a way different economic place than my family was when they had me. But I still am just like, he's not going to care about me getting him designer clothes or a fancy birthday party or anything. Like, because that's not what I cared about. And it's wanting to match the experience that my mom gave me.
So we did ask your mom, what role did faith play in your family?
Oh, faith was everything in our family. I mean, religion in general was a huge aspect of our life. We were always in church. So I think that that was always a big part of it. But specifically when it comes to faith, again, like my mom was just very much like, don't let what you see around you keep you from creating a different reality. Okay, now story. I was in what in my hometown, it's called intermediate school, which is fifth and sixth grade. They separated that out from middle school. I was in intermediate school and I got invited to this program called People to People, which some folks might be familiar with. It's they invite middle schoolers and high schoolers on these trips around the country and around the world sometimes to learn about things. You go for like a week or so and get to do cool things. The goal was like, oh, your kid's going to be around other young people who also care about these things. And it's like training them for these formative professional and academic experiences. And so the first People to People program that I got invited to was a trip to Paris, London, and Brussels. And it would have been my first time out of the country. I was so, so excited. And the trip was like $4,000 or $5,000. And we were just like, that's a lot of money. And I was just like, but I really want to go. And I think I'm going to go. And my mom was like, and if you believe that, then like, let your faith lead the way. Months before the trip, I packed a suitcase for Paris. And the suitcase sat at the door of my bedroom for months until the trip. And during that time, we were fundraising. We'd like go to BJ's, get those boxes of candies, sell them at church and at school and stuff. And slowly build up the money, and we actually raised the money. We were able to go. And my mom was just like, and you knew it. You knew it before anyone else because you packed your bags and you said, I'm
Was that
going.
Your idea? Was that your idea to pack the bag?
I think it was, but I think my mom had given me the prodding, was like, you know, in the church, we say you need faith the size of a mustard seed, and mustard seeds are very small. So she's like, you don't need a lot of faith, but it has to, you have to believe it. Like, you can't be like, I hope I'll go. And in your head, you're like, oh, there's no way I'm going. Like, you have to believe it with your whole heart.
Okay, let's hear what Tina said.
My husband and I are pastors. The kids was in the choir and youth leaders and things of that nature. And as they got older, they chose how they would worship God. If I force them, I turn it off to them. So it's their decision. You worship the way you worship, how you worship. If you worship, that's your choice. But my faith definitely shaped the way I parented. I mean, things that we did, we prayed together, we fasted together as family, we had hardships, we danced together.
I think we should give you the gold star.
No, you both said it's everything.
Yeah, normally I'd be like, nah, but I think you're on a streak, and that can't be the answer that breaks the streak, is how I feel.
I also like, feel like that is the answer. You were there multiple days a week. It was everything. And so this kind of brings us to our next question. And I actually think it a little bit aligns with your activism and your outspokenness, but with faith being so much of a priority in your family, how did you come out to your family and how did that affect them?
Yeah, that was really big. Because again, not just on my, like, it's not just my mom's side. Both of my parents' sides were pastors. So I had two sets of grandparents who were pastors. And then my parents were in the lining to be pastors as well as a child. Now they are. And so I knew that it was going to be a really big deal. I didn't tell them until, I told my siblings, but I didn't tell my parents until about like 5 or 6 months in. And I shared that with my partner because I was like, look, I'm about to tell my mom and dad. When I do, you're not allowed to break up with me because I'm about to shake up my entire everything. Like, I've always been the, Bria's the like good child who doesn't give anyone issues. She's the mediator. She just does what is asked of her. And this is the first time I was going against the grain of what I had been taught at home. And I remember in the conversation, I had tried to tell them in person. And I had at the time been like living out of the country. So I was home for a brief trip. I had tried a few times on the trip and chickened out. And I was in the airport on my way back to the country I was living in. And I was like, I cannot not tell them. And I called them on FaceTime. Kind of regret this still. But I called them on FaceTime. I was like, I got to tell you something. And to the telepathy thing that me and my mom have going on right now, my mom immediately said my now wife's name. So I was like, I just have to tell y'all something. She's like, is it Mariah? And I said, oh, how does she know? And I was like, yes. And she's like, what do you want to tell me about Mariah? And I said, me and her are dating. And she's like, I knew. And she had seen that sort of coming. And in that conversation, what I felt most from both her and my dad was that they wanted to give me a great initial response. And so they were just like, we love you. You know, nothing can change that. And all of those things. So I left the call being like, whew, that wasn't so bad. And then she sends me a text and it's like a list of like 100 Bible verses about homosexuality in the Bible.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like, okay, I didn't get away that easy. It's still going to be the journey. And it was definitely difficult. With my mom, again, her willingness to learn and unlearn was what made it actually something that brought us closer. At the time, she was going back to school and she was in a theological seminary. And I don't think she realized how progressive the seminary was. It's a New York-based seminary that is very inclusive. And so some of her homework assignments were like, do research on what trans-inclusive theology is and come up with a recommended new policy for your home church. And my mom is like, trans? I got to ask my daughter what this stuff means and how to address it. And so it started off with me like helping her a bit with her homework. It was like, oh, she has a homework assignment that is asking her to think more critically about the LGBTQ community. And I am the closest person to her that's
this
a part of that
community.
This is
why higher education matters so much.
And so that was one thing. The other thing, which is another plug, you plugged higher education. This is a plug for the arts, is that she watched the Whitney Houston documentary. And that was a light for her. She watched the documentary and her takeaway from the documentary was, I never knew that Whitney had a girlfriend. And that everyone around her basically pressured her out of being in that relationship, being her authentic self. And if she was her authentic self and didn't have to hide who she was, would she have turned to drugs the way that she did? Would she have spiraled into addiction the way that she did? Would she still be here? And her takeaway was essentially that, like, the homophobia around her and the, like, restrictive nature around Whitney Houston kind of contributed to her early death. And she was just like, if my daughter was in an early grave because of something I said to her or because I didn't let her be herself, I could never forgive myself. And so she called me right after watching it and was like, I get it. I'm sorry. I want to figure this out with you. And was like, let's work this out. And it was definitely not an easy road. There were other moments along it where it also required my mom to have critical conversations with her parents. There was a Christmas where I asked if I could bring my then girlfriend to Christmas. And my mom was like, well, you know, Christmas is at Nana and Poppy's house. You got to ask them. And I said, Nana, Poppy, can I bring Mariah to Christmas? And they said, thank you so much for asking. No. And I was like, oh, I, again, am the child who doesn't cause problems. I'm the grandchild. I was the first grandchild to graduate from college. I'm like, and it was Yale. And so I'm just like, all that I do for the family, all that I swallow for the family, and my partner can't come. And so my mom was like, well, we do Christmas, you know, at the house, you know, like, basically, we start Christmas at my parents' house, and then we would go to my grandparents' house. And so she was like, well, you and Mariah come to the house. And so we did something with my parents at their house first. And then when it was time for everyone to go to my grandparents' house, me and Mariah went somewhere else, and we hung out with a friend. And afterwards, my mom had called me and was like, I never should have let you go. I should have told my parents, if Bria can't come, none of us are coming. And I should have put my foot down. And I think they kind of all expected, oh, Bria's still going to come, or and seeing me put my foot down and say, well, if Mariah can't come, then I'm not either. People are like, where's Bria? Why is she not at Christmas? She's with Mariah. Oh, and after that, my grandfather, who's not alive anymore, who was a pastor then, had called me and told me that he was in the shower and that God spoke to him in the shower and told him that he was wrong and that he needed to apologize to me. And that that me and my wife, well, then girlfriend, were always welcome at their house.
I'm so moved by so many parts of this story. But one of the things that I think about, it's just like a particularly exciting and contributive to the larger community, is that your mom now has access to her community where she is a pastor, and that she gets to guide other parents through this, you know, that it's kind of like what we were saying where, you know, if you give someone a challenge, they have the opportunity to grow from it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to take that away from them. I feel like you gave your mom such, and your grandfather and your father, like, such an incredible opportunity to grow. And because of that, they get to help other people grow.
Yeah. And so, like, literally exactly what you just said, because after this fact, I think someone called my mom. Someone from the church was calling just to vent, like, oh, my child is gay and I kicked them out or something. And my mom said, you did what? How could you do that to you? And like, she's like coaching them. You kicked your child out? That's not of God. You think God called you to bring a child into this world and then reject them? And like, was truly like both coaching and a little bit like chastising this person into being like, you've got to be a better parent than that. And you can't believe that. That is what God has called you to be, is to like cast your child out when they need you most. And like hearing her being able to coach other people through that after all that we've gone through together is like, yeah, it makes it all worth it for sure. It was not easy, and it makes it, and it's just like to get to tell people who are in similar religious worlds as what I grew up in is like, it sounds so cliche, but I promise it gets better. Like, I never thought I'd be in this place. My mom calls and is like, I didn't call to see you. Where is my grandson? And I didn't carry him. My wife carried him. And I was a little nervous. Mm-hmm. Like, are they going to see the child that my wife carries as theirs too?
Right.
Not without a question. Absolutely. She literally just texted me, where's my gammy man? That's what she calls him.
That is your activism, just living in your authenticity. Exactly. I will also say, I do think your mom could have a side hustle in branding. She is so good at names and slogans.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, let's hear what Tina said.
One day she did call us on the phone and she said, I have, can you get daddy? I want to talk to both of you. So I was like, is everything okay? And she said, it is. When he got on the phone, she said, I need to talk to you about my sexuality. And immediately I said her friend's name. So for me, in my apostolic Pentecostal belief, that's forbidden. And so now my theology is being tested, because what I was taught biblically and what is mine, my child, is in conflict. I just felt if I didn't see it, then it would be okay. but I can't unsee my child. And so she said, Mommy, can she come to dinner with us? And she came to the house and I sat next to her and we took a picture together. And I said, you know what, Stephen? I'm not throwing our daughter away. I'm not going to do it. God permitted her to call me a name I had not earned. And that's Mommy. Oh, and that's God. What I'm going to be. I'm going to be her mother. And my husband said, okay. When she got married, she posted a picture. And I said to my husband, the church is going to come for her. So my husband said, here's a post. Put the picture of them in their wedding gowns. And we said, theology can be debated, but our love cannot be debated. This is our daughters. And we wanted them to attack us. Don't touch her.
Yeah, and that's really true. I will say that when I got married to my wife, people in the church were like mad at my parents for being in attendance. And the interesting thing is like to bring in my dad, me and my dad had had a tough relationship prior because I thought that he was on board and he had been so great around my now wife, Mariah. And so I asked him to walk me down the aisle and he said no. He was not comfortable giving me away and specifically answering the question, who gives her away? And that had really, really hurt me. And we didn't talk for a while leading up to the wedding. And I didn't uninvite him to the wedding, but I was really hurt. His brother walked me down the aisle. And at the wedding, he like immediately afterwards like walked up to us and was like, I have another daughter now. And I was so emotional, but really happy, but really sad still. Like, I wish you had realized this before and you could have walked me down, but it is what it is. It happened when it happened. And then realizing all the pressure that they had been under, that people were essentially calling for them to like lose their licenses to be in the church the way that they were, to say that you attended that wedding and you know where our church stands. And they did. They put up so many social media posts so that the bad comments were under their posts and not under mine. And they'd respond, like people would comment under my dad's post and be like, where's the husband? And like my dad would be like, nowhere, like there is none. And I'm like, wow, like I'm finally seeing this energy from y'all. And it felt so good to be protected in that way. And I don't think I had stopped to realize how much I was asking them to forego something they had their whole life believed. For 50 years, they had been told doing this will send you to like eternal damnation. And so they truly believed I'm protecting my child by telling her that this is something that will hurt you. And then they had to realize that the best protection they could do was to like shield me from the people who believed that and that were going to try and project that onto our happiness. And they, them choosing to like be that armor in that moment was just like everything.
I'm in an interfaith relationship and we experienced something similar with folks not really being accepting of that. I guess I'm not trying to say it's the same exact thing at all, but, there was the same idea of like, I don't know that I can show up to the wedding. I don't know that I can be here. And it's such a long thing and I want to like try to usurp your story here because it's beautiful. But I just relate to it. And I just say what I'm admiring is your parents' ability to, instead of ranking godliness above connection to family, they like put it in together.
They equate it, yes.
They equated it. They were like, actually, they're not different. And like to be able to look at your intuition of something and examine it and go, you know what? I think my intuition on this in terms of being a mom actually supersedes what is written in this book that told me how to be a good servant of the Lord is a tremendous courage that it takes to do that is absolutely tremendous. And I just applaud them for that. And like, it's clear that, and man, what you had to go through to in those moments to be suffering through the, like, you know, my dad's not going to walk me down. Like it's, you know, as much as you're seeing them in the ways that they do accept, you're also kind of suffering through the ways that they can't yet. And to now have the perspective on it to say like, well, to have the empathy, I'm also just in, you know, admiration of that too, because like you guys are, what mm-hmm. you're doing as a family on either side of it is you're both, you just keep coming back to repair and you're like mm-hmm. modeling this ability to repair with each other. Like I should have done it this way. We shouldn't have gone to Nanny and Papa's. Like to even say that to you, right? To have that conversation with you is brave, to admit that is brave, and for you to receive that and not be like, well, F you for not thinking that ahead of time is also courageous and brave. There's so much trust that you guys built in each other and this concept of your, you know, family being this this glue and being able to really rely and support each other. I mean, it's just so awesome.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you shared your experience though too, Sandeep, because that's, I always think of my wife's experience. And I think that's what made me be like, me holding a grudge is keeping her from the in-law experience that she deserves.
Yes.
And I am so grateful to have the relationship that I have with her family, and I want her to get there with mine. And she deserves to have sisters-in-laws and brothers-in-laws and my mom and my dad. Like, she deserves that experience too. And that's not her job to talk to my family about that. That's me. That's my job to have those difficult conversations and like make sure the space is a space for her too.
We are now moving into what we call the lightning round.
I love those sound effects.
Those are professional sound effects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I totally didn't just do them with my face. So we're going to ask you some questions. These are going to be short answers, and we're going to do a quick compare and contrast. And in the lightning round, you get double stars.
Ooh.
I know the stakes are high, baby.
This is like, okay. This is like a perfect game, you know, like in a way. So like, I can't look at you. You know what I mean? Like how they do it in baseball. Like I can't even make eye contact because right now you're throwing a perfect game. All right, here we go.
Okay. Question number one, what's the best trait? This is what your mom said. What did your mom say? Is the best trait Bria got from you? What's the best trait your mom would say you got from her?
That I'm empathetic and that I'm a good, like, talker or coach, I guess.
Okay, let's see.
How caring. She's a nurturer.
Close, but okay. No, I think that's a no. Sorry. Okay. I think that's a no.
Yep. Okay, streak broken. I can look at you again.
Although she said empathetic.
I was going to say empathy,
caring,
nurturing,
and empathy, I guess, are kind of the same
thing. And then nurture and coach.
You're right.
Get back point.
Checking the thesaurus. We're going to give it to you. All right.
Okay.
What's the worst trait that you got from your mom?
Putting other people first.
She wouldn't stand up for herself.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fine. Yep. Jeez, please. Okay. Who would be the first person that you would thank in your Oscar speech?
God.
I'm going to say Mariah.
Oh, but I love that she said that.
I love the answer. See, sometimes it doesn't have to always match, and we can love it even better that it doesn't match. What would you say your, Bria's, primary love language is?
Acts of service.
Acts of service. Here we go.
I would say it's words of affirmation.
Close. Okay. What does your mom say is your pet peeve?
What does my mom think my pet peeve is? White supremacy?
Okay, let's hear what Tina said.
I'm being disrespected.
Sure.
I mean, they go hand in hand.
Right.
Okay.
I'll give you one star.
Okay, that works.
What was your favorite food growing up?
Chicken.
Fried chicken.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Bam.
Okay, so this one is, what are three adjectives that your mom would use to describe you? You get 2 points for each one you get right.
I think she would say smart or some synonym of that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind or caring, some synonym of that. And understanding. Like, I see other people's sides a lot.
Okay.
Amazing, caring, loving.
So we'll give you kind and understanding. Okay. Mm-hmm. But she did say you're dumb as bricks. She did say that.
So we cut that one wrong.
So yeah, where's the smart part coming from?
If you could have any superpower, what do you think? We asked her, what do you think you would pick?
Reading minds.
Mm.
to save the world from injustice.
All right, so I think we got to get your mom some comic books.
Right. Saving the world from injustice. I love it.
It's like the positive Thanos. I snap my fingers and the world is saved. Yeah. Amazing.
Okay, we asked your mom, what is your biggest irrational fear?
I think because she doesn't love how much I'm a people pleaser, I think something tied to like people like rejecting me or not loving me or just like, like this idea that like, if I'm not constantly putting other people first, I won't have people around me, something like that.
Okay.
That she can save the world.
Oh, that she can't? Is that what
that was? That she can't, yeah.
That she can't save the world.
Oh, I don't believe that though. I know I can.
Okay, I like that.
I mean, that's that mustard seed. What was your pet name?
From her, Bia Bia.
Bia Bia.
Ding, ding, ding.
Love that.
And last one, if there was anybody in the world, alive or dead, that you could have dinner with, who would it be?
Angela Davis.
My father, because he just passed away last year. I think she would want to have a conversation with Poppy. But then, you know, she's got her, my husband's parents. She's very close with them. And that's really what the book came to. She might want to have it with all three of them.
Dang, that's a better answer. She knows me better. That's a better answer. That's better. Yeah.
That's she went for they're the all great answers.
Emotional jugular.
Yeah.
Bria, this was, listen, don't tell the others. This is my favorite episode.
I'm putting that on my resume now. So
you are such an incredible guest, friend, speaker, activist. We are so lucky to know you. We are so lucky to have you to amplify your voice in any way. We are so lucky. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you both. I feel so lucky. And I think this was such a great exercise. And it's actually making me think more about things that I'm like, no, I want to be really intentional about doing that with Davis and recognizing the source and what things influence me. And so doing a podcast about motherhood and now getting to think about my own motherhood journey, like this has been a really great way to spend a Tuesday evening. So thank y'all so much.
Ooh-wee. Well, do you have any tissues left or did you run through the whole box like I did?
I'm just going to let the snot roll down my face.
Just do this whole thing. This whole outro, just sniffling and sobbing. That was just beautiful. Man, I have so much respect for Bria and so thankful that she's in this world. Like,
I know. I feel the same.
That's pretty great. We need more Brias, so and that they're propagating more as well in her son is great. I'm excited for that.
I love what she said. I mean, I loved so many moments in there.
Yeah,
I really love what she said at the end to her mom, which was thank you for taking motherhood so seriously. Because I, you know, as a working mom, it's a thing that I'm constantly noticing is that I sometimes have to like deprioritize motherhood to temporarily prioritize work. And even though what I really think is going to matter to me most when I look back at my life is how much I prioritize motherhood, I also really love the takeaway of like people pleasing makes sense. And sometimes, for sure, I have people pleasing tendencies. And sometimes I feel like my tank is full enough that if it means I have to give to somebody else, that's fine. It is okay for me to please these people. It doesn't cost me that much. But the other side of it is, you know, there's a growth opportunity. And I probably said this like six times during the episode, but I'm always kind of keeping an eye out for a growth opportunity. But there's a growth opportunity that you're maybe taking away from somebody else by not letting them be the one that has a generous moment.
Yeah. I had so many takeaways. The three that I wrote down real quick were, the don't let someone ghostwrite your dreams.
Yes.
I'm stealing that one.
Tattoo it on your face backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. So my son can read it. That was huge. And then like just the ways that her mom took those steps, Tina took those steps to just help them visualize their success, physicalize it. Like print the menu when you're making the food for everybody. Like the book cover, obviously the like, you know, see yourself walking down these corridors again.
Write down mama. and give it to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like, what? And she didn't grow up in the age of, you know, Instagram
parenting.
Feeds. Yeah. They were like, oh, I gotta save that and send that to my wife. You know, like,
no, but also talk about like what an example. I mean, Tina is so intuitive. She's doing this like just trusting her gut, and I'm sure she would refer to her gut as something deeply tied to her faith. But she was doing this on the fly with four kids, no less.
Crazy. I know, we're such babies.
I know, we're like, can we even have another?
Right. And the last thing I'll say is the consistency thing. Man, I got to be better about the consistency thing and not bending to your, you know, if you got a conviction about something and that you really think the value of it is that important, you know, like the giving the gift away thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Let your child's going to be really uncomfortable with that for a long time and really have a trouble understanding that for a long time. And maybe that's okay.
I think also part of what I'm taking away is like, if we instill kids with good values, they're going to find ways to fulfill that in their lives. Like Tina instilled in Bria a curiosity, a drive, even that like wearing the pants thing, like a growth mindset.
How,
and activist
could I be
mindset.
Any more metaphorical?
Right.
One of my favorite episodes for sure. Thank you guys for listening.
I
for
do
all
think
you
we say
there.
That every episode, and I think that's
I know,
great.
But there, I know, that. I know this is true. But this one was, this one was great. Thanks to all you out there for listening to this, Your Mom is a Podcast.
Yeah.
We appreciate you.
If you can, if you're here, if you're still listening, just like and subscribe. Tell a friend. Come on.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Don't let someone ghostwrite your comments. You do it. Your Mom is a Podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F and Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Mommy, I just finished the podcast. Thank you so much for all your answers. It's as if this is possible. It made me love you even more. And I'm just so, so grateful for how seriously you took the job of being a mother and how much it is inspiring me to do the same with Davis. Love you so much. Bye.